Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
In the Hoosier Media Network studios.
The next generation in conservative talk radio. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed, done right it is. What's up? Welcome into it. It is the Voice of Reason's weekend edition. I am Andy Hoosier. Hey, so wonderful to have you along for the ride on another weekend as we continue to roll through. I'm looking at, so I'm based out of Wichita, Kansas, by the way. Welcome into it. It is out of the Hoosier Media Network studios. We are broadcasting here in Wichita, all over the country, multiple radio stations, TV, live streaming, podcasting. However you check us out, it's so great to have you. So I'm watching here this weekend with some of the weather that's rolling through, and I love hearing about how it's all obviously climate change. Now, this is a spring storm because that's just what happens all the way from Texas all the way up to Nebraska. Just a couple of days ago, if you did watch some of the news, that we had some tornadoes roll through and wipe out some places in the Nebraska area. We're under some tornado threats and stuff here as well across Oklahoma and Kansas. So it's definitely fun to watch. And I got to be honest, I love this type of year. I love this season. I love watching the storms. It's exhilarating to me. It feels the energy. But the other side, there's a paranoia. There's a fear that comes along with this, because whenever something changes from cold to warm or warm to cold, obviously the mixture of the yin and the yang, the positive, the negative, the warm and the cold, when everything mixes, there's chaos, which is the way the universe works, right? But the other side of the aisle, they see that and they get fearful of it, which is why we hear these claims about climate change, which is why we hear about the fear about the weather changing and global warming that's going to kill us all. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a second. It's all going to kill us all.
We're all going to die because of you.
Yeah, so kind of entertaining. I find it energizing nonetheless. So if you see me and you can follow my social media, if you see me with a selfie pic here soon with a tornado out in front of my front yard, I'm totally okay with that. And yes, that is really me, because I just honestly enjoy this kind of stuff. All right. Social media. You can find me all over the social media at Hoosier Reason, H-O-O-S-E-R Reason, on the social media handle. That is the same for all of them on the Facebook and the Tweety and the TikTok and everything else. Yes, we have a TikTok. I know it's very controversial, but we have one nonetheless. Our YouTube channel, Rumble as well. Although I don't use that one very much anymore, and other places. Then, of course, our website at HoosierReason.com. Bottom of the hour, we have Akash Shogali on the program. He's the Vice President of Americans for Prosperity. Our great partners with us here on the radio show, as we'll talk about Bidenomics, and not just Bidenomics, not just about how bad the economy is right now, but the greater question of what can we do about it? What can we do to fix it? And is the Republican Party doing their part in fixing this as well? We'll go into some detail about that here in just a little bit, because right now I'm looking at the headlines. And as we wrap up some of the headlines from this week, we have a few different things. Number one, according to CNBC, let's take a look at the GDP growth. GDP growth ended up slowing, according to them, by a 1.6% rate for the first quarter of 2024, down from the expected 2.4%. So we're about half of what was expected for the first quarter of the year, and the Biden administration not starting off this year relatively well. Now, I want to clarify for just a moment here, and I want to set the stage for this. Normally, and I know we have short-term memory losses, but I want you to remember that during election seasons specifically, whoever the incumbent is, they usually do anything they possibly can to talk about how great the economy is going, right? Because that's the most important part. You filling up your gas tank, getting food from the grocery store, being able to pay your bills, being able to pay off bills, being able to set money aside. That is what most people feel on a daily basis, which is why conservatives focus so much time talking about economic issues. I know it's kind of dull and boring at times, but it's extremely important. And when you go to the voting booth, yeah, there's social issues and there's the abortion thing and there's the gun thing, and all of them are important. But at the end of the day, the one that hits your pocketbook the most, metaphorically and physically speaking, on a daily basis, is the economy, on how well things are going. So normally an elected official will do everything in their power to make the economy look good going into an election year. They try to get rid of some of the oil reserves and just inject the system with some more oil to try and lower gas prices with a surplus in the market, so that way things look really good. They'll try to print more money, or they'll try to do whatever they can to lower interest rates, to lower inflation, whatever they can to make the economy look nice, so that way they can go into an election year and say, look, everything's great. Don't worry about it. Go ahead and just vote for me, because I'll continue this trend. And then after the election, everything goes back up. That's not the case for the Biden administration, and that won't be the case for the administration this year because they can't. They've already kind of wasted all the money that they can. They've done everything they've already wanted to in the past 3 years. It's gone. There are no more oil reserves for them to inject in to lower the price of gas going into summertime when we are way just weeks even away from Memorial Weekend when you start your summertime traveling. Oh, you hear that? There you go. See, there's some of that thunder that's moving right on through the area. See, even they're upset. They're upset about the economy. There's no way that they can inject anymore, which means gas prices will be high for Memorial Weekend and all through the summertime, making voters very angry for election season. Then economic growth is usually what keeps us going with interest rates or with whatever else that they have going, that interest rates or that the GDP growth will at least be able to keep up with some of the debt. So that way we could say, hey, people are spending money. And while it may not look good and those naysayers over there, they don't want us to say how great the economy is, that look how great GDP growth is. And now with the 1 for 6% rate, that's not going to be the case. But let's take it a little bit deeper, shall we? There's a great, and this, we should just run this. I mean, I'm just going to let this roll because this is a great campaign ad against Joe Biden that was accidentally slipped out by a guest on mainstream media, a guy by the name of Scott Galloway that was on MSNBC talking about how bad the economy is, especially for the younger generation.
For the first time in our nation's history, a 30-year-old man or woman isn't doing as well as his or her parents were at 30. That is the social compact breaking down. People aged 30 to 34, 60% of them in 1990 had one child. Now it's 27%. People are opting out of America. They're not optimistic about it. They're not having kids. Young people aren't having sex. They're not meeting. They're not mating. The pool of emotionally and economically viable men shrinks every day, which lessens household formation. So we have a real issue. Young people are enraged. So it turns every cut, every movement into an opportunistic infection because, quite frankly, they are just pissed off. They look up, they see wealth, exceptional wealth across my generation and people in certain industries, and they are really struggling. Their purchasing power is going down, and the incumbents create artificial scarcity on campus. We take pride in rejecting 90% of our applicants. So the incumbents who already have a degree see their degree go up in value. We get very concerned with housing and traffic once we own the housing. Housing permits are sequestered from young people. Housing prices have gone from 290 to 420 in the last 4 years. So a young person, a house, stocks that I don't own skyrocket in value. Let's have COVID relief and flush the markets and take assets way up because if a million people dying would be bad, would be tragic if I got less wealthy. And we're doing it on their credit card. Young people have every reason to be enraged, and every issue they see, they look up, they get angry, and they see someone doing better than them. And then every day it is speedballed in their face that they are failing, that they are not doing as well as everyone around them. We have lost the script. Our kids are more anxious and more depressed and more obese and more addicted. And we have made a purposeful decision to let this happen by ensuring the people around this table stay wealthy at the cost of young people.
I know that was a long clip, but I had to let that roll. Scott Galloway again on MSNBC. He's right. All you have, the young generation, this is, again, the core voters for the Democrat Party right now because they're losing the minorities, they're losing the women, they're losing this group, they're losing that group, they're losing all the identity politics because of how bad the policies are under Joe Biden. Their core voter base are younger individuals, the bleeding hearts. Remember the ones that are passionate, that want to change the world, my generation and younger, the millennials. And right now, the millennials, we're not buying homes because it's too damn expensive. We have student loan debt. It's our fault. We need to pay our student loans back on our own, but we have student loan debt, so we can't afford a home. And when the average price for a home goes from like $200,000 to $400,000, that means you needed to make a buttload of money to be able to afford that. They're not starting families. They said they're not having adult activities. They don't even want kids, many of them. Why? Because they're scared. I take that back. They want kids. They're afraid of being able to take care of them and raise them because of how bad the economy is. So they're not starting families. And that's a cause for concern, I think, for a large portion of the generation. According to the Wall Street Journal, young Americans are getting left behind by rising home prices and higher stocks. We can't invest money in the stock market. And if we do, we invest it in one of those, you know, fly-by-night things that's not making a whole lot, you know, some type of digital currency with Dogecoin that's like 0.00000 of a penny. And that doesn't get us anywhere. Yeah, if it goes up a penny, then sure, we'll make a lot of money. But we can't invest in a lot of stuff. We don't have that money. We're trying to make it. We have student loan debts where we have a career that's not really making us the money to pay back the student loans because the value of college education's gone downhill as well. So we have this ongoing battle right now with the young generation not being able to do what the prior generations, our parents, have been able to do. Start the family, get the home, have a career, start their life and enjoy. We can't get started. And I'm not saying that we're victims. I don't want to play the victim here. But this is the core. The point is the core value, the core base of the Democrats right now is that generation. And who caused this? I mean, it's not all on Joe Biden. Let's be fair here. But it's large part. It's all by Democrat policies, by inflating the economy, by spending money, all these social programs, the COVID-19 pandemic, bailing everybody out. And now we see it even a war in a class war within millennials by themselves. Another headline, NBC News. The new class war, the wealth gap between millennials. According to Robert Frank, they say the wealth gap between rich millennials and the rest of their age group is the largest of any generation, creating the new wave of class tension and resentment. So now the generation that's been getting the participation trophy, we have two. We have the working ones that have actually made it, that made some smart decisions, or maybe they had, you know, some transfer of wealth from their younger generations going up. And then we have the other ones that are struggling, and now we have the greatest wealth gap in a single generation than in any time in American history. Things cannot be sustained this way. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to find a way to do the redistribution. That's their solution, not finding out why and actually creating an environment for everybody to have equal opportunity, which would be lowering inflation, allowing people to have their money back, getting rid of crazy interest rates, allowing the economy to flourish and not have only a 1.6% GDP growth in a quarter. But they're not going to go down that road. They're going to do the other thing, which is, of course, wealth redistribution. We need to redistribute wealth across the board. We need to have those rich and elite millennials pay for the ones that didn't get the opportunity because they got a degree at college that didn't quite serve them right. That's the solution. You mark my words. This is today, this weekend, the end of April 2024. Mark the words down that the voice of reason spoke. Because that will be the conversation as our generation becomes more and more influential. We start taking over the reins in government and we see this class warfare, this class disparity in this generation that's going to take the reins, unfortunately. That will be the conversation. The rich ones have to pay for the poor ones. The elitism has to pay for the less fortunate, the victimized in society. Why? Because we started that. We are the victimized generation. We are the first ones that got the participation trophy. But this economy is not serving them well at all. And it's more and more difficult for them to do so. Now, the younger generations behind us, they're seeing that and doing what they can. And maybe, just maybe, they'll be able to solve some of this and actually get on the right track, which we're already seeing. The number of high school students that are actually applying for federal aid right now is down dramatically at this time of year compared to any other generation. In fact, last year, there was, I think they said, 50% of high school seniors had already signed up for FAFSA and applied for some form of federal aid because that deadline's coming up in May. So they were already working on it. This year, however, it's only sitting at just over 30%. 30% of the young generation, the seniors in this year's high school, have applied, which means either they don't want the craziness going on at the colleges with the activism, or they realize that they don't want to get into such ridiculous amounts of debt. Which either way, whatever way you look at it, I applaud you for making smarter decisions than my generation did.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. It's your Patriot on the Prairie. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Hey, darn right it is. Welcome back into it. 24 minutes past the hour, radio, TV, live streaming, podcasting, however you check us out. So great. Your Patriot on the Prairie, your Millennial General. By the way, speaking of the prairies, moving through the nice storms, I love it. It might scare others. I'm going to be out there with a selfie when the tornado hits. I'm totally ready for it. So welcome back into the show. So we have the age and the wealth gap within one generation, the largest wealth gap between a single generation in American history, and that's largely because of the economy that we've set up here. As the Biden administration says, what do they want? They want the bottom up and the middle out. Well, they're squeezing the middle, and they're increasing the bottom, and they're increasing the top with their own fan favorite, and then no one else can end up getting into that class, which is the environment that Democrats always create. So remember, everything a progressive tells you, do the opposite. Do the absolute opposite. And Andy, how do you know that the millennials are going to talk about redistribution of wealth within their own generation? I mean, it's not that it's not that hard to be that obvious, right?
I'm special.
Yeah, I know, right? So there's actually, if you want proof positive, there's actually an argument right now going on with the G20 summit and ministers at the G20. I don't know why they call them ministers. That's a little weird. But here's the headline from TheGuardian.com. World's billionaires should pay a minimum 2% wealth tax. Now, this is not from an individual nation. This is not from one country just saying, you know, there's too many, as Bernie Sanders would say, the millionaires and billionaires. It's not about that. This is the G20 summit advocating for the United Nations to do a 2% wealth tax on billionaires. And what do they want to do with it? They want to use that money and turn it around and use it to fight wealth disparities across the world. According to the article, the 3,000 billionaires should pay a minimum 2% tax on their fast-growing wealth to raise 250 billion euros a year to help fight global poverty, inequality, and global heating, according to the ministers from the four leading economies that they've suggested. The countries include Brazil, Germany, South Africa, and Spain, saying that they want the 2% global tax on billionaires to help pay for climate change initiatives, fight poverty, and fight inequality. That's what they want. Now, some people say, oh, that's a great idea. That's a 30,000-foot view. That sounds awesome. Just move that money around, that they have way too much money, that they're a bunch of rich jerks, and we need to actually, you know, make this a little bit more fair. But any type of macro issue, should we not bring it down to the micro level as an example to test it and see if it actually works or not? Let's go to, oh, I don't know, the United States of America and look at wealth redistribution and see how well that works. We have more people climbing into the lower poverty line because of inflation right now. We have rich people that when they do get taxed, they end up leaving the nation or leaving the state, wherever that may be, for their ridiculous taxes, because we don't want to be taxed at that level and because they shouldn't need to be taxed at that level. Andy, it's 2% of the $1 billion. It's not that much money. Come on. You need to play fair. It's not going to hurt them. But yet, what does that actually do? Is that actually solve the poverty? Because it hasn't yet. In every social experiment where we've tried redistribution of wealth, name where it's actually worked. Name where poverty has gone away and people have changed their spending habits. They've changed their livelihoods. They've done things for the better and have stayed out of poverty. If someone wins the lottery all of a sudden and they get $100 million, what's the stat? What's the ratio of the number of people that are back in poverty again like 5 years later down the road because they didn't handle their money appropriately? We don't have a wealth disparity issue. I mean, we do because of Democrat policies, but we have a deeper issue going on. And it's people that are wasteful. Why do you think we have a housing burst that happens every few years? Why do you think that we have people that have the highest credit card rates ever right now in the United States with holding on to some type of credit card debt because they don't want to get rid of their own lifestyles because they don't want to change their lifestyle by actually cutting out some of their spending with some of the ridiculously high prices that we have in the Biden economy right now? That's not going to solve the issue. It's way deeper. But again, politics doesn't look at the depth. They don't look at the layers of the onion. They look at a solution to control more people and take away wealth from successful people and then give it to people or not give it to people and say they give it to people, which is what they like to do as well.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When reason meets radio, this is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
I am extremely fascinated about this conversation about the wealth disparity between the millennial generation, the widest gap in a single generation in American history, what that's going to lead to, because that will lead to a deeper conversation, at least I'm hoping leads to a deeper conversation about how we go in managing and fixing that and what it's going to take to actually get us out of that situation, kind of the reset button in society, because right now it's not getting any better for sure. Do me a favor, go to Bidenomics.com. And I know it's kind of a weird request because, Andy, why I want propaganda from Joe Biden? It's not, I promise you. Our friends over at Americans for Prosperity are great partners with us here on the program. They're the ones that bought that domain. So if you go to Bidenomics.com, then you'll see the real numbers of what the economy looks like right now. And obviously, with a 1.6% GDP growth in the quarter, you can see how well it's working out when we've raised interest rates, what like 12 times under the Biden administration and Janet Yellen with the Treasury Department. And we've spent all this money with COVID relief and we've done the Biden bailouts. And now he's touring around saying he's going to do the spending Save America. Look at how much money I've spent. You can see how well it's actually worked. And those numbers are factual on Bidenomics.com with how you get to pay that price with inflation on your gas and your food and everything else. Really happy to talk about some of that and so much more with the vice president of our partners at Americans for Prosperity as he talks about what the economy looks like right now with Mr. Akash Shogali. Akash, how are you, my friend?
I am great. Thank you for having me back on.
Oh, it's so good to chat with you as always. I got to get your take on the latest bills that we've passed. Since the last time we've talked, we've now, I guess you could say, officially passed a federal budget with all of our appropriation bills, although it wasn't necessarily a spending cut that we've seen. We just recently passed our foreign aid package as well, sending money to Israel and Ukraine and everywhere else around the globe. Are we cutting back on any spending and actually getting our budget under control at the federal level, do you think?
Sadly, obviously not. But here's the thing, Andy, which is that these annual appropriation fights and fights over foreign aid, we, you know, everyone has substantive disagreements with parts of it. We certainly do at AFP, and you know, folks on the left and the right might disagree with this portion or that portion. These are death chairs on the Titanic. The vast majority of federal spending, the major drivers of our national debt, of our annual deficit, they are never debated in Congress. And that's because federal spending is broken up into two buckets. There's what's called discretionary spending, right? It's discretionary. Every year they debate it, it can change. Congress votes on it once a year. And then there's what's called mandatory spending. These are programs that are on pilot. They don't need to be reauthorized. There's no annual debate over them. That latter bucket accounts for 70% of all federal spending. Yeah. The problem is the things that are in there are the things that everybody loves, right? Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. It includes interest on our debt. It includes Obamacare premiums. These are things people rely on, but the government has wildly overpromised, and too many politicians from both parties are committed to not touching these programs because they're afraid of political consequences. And so, again, another disappointing budget cycle, and the process is broken, but we have got to get serious and start talking about our budget process reform so that we can start dealing with these entitlement programs that are driving our debt and deficit.
Yeah, amen to that. And like you said, no one wants to talk about this. And the ratio used to be about 60-40 already with that mandatory spending being untouched at near 60%. But like you said, now it's at like 70-30, sometimes, you know, even like an 80-20, which is wild to me. And then we hear about, you know, like military spending and how it's 60% of the budget. Yeah, in discretionary funding, it's you know, part of that. But the mandatory spending, like you said, this is killing us. And we're not allowed to talk about it, even to the point to where if it's growing automatically at, say, a 6% growth every year, and we say, hey, maybe we should slow this down to like a 2% growth just to try and save some cash, then according to economic numbers in Washington, D.C., that's a 4% cut, and now people are going to die in the streets, and how dare you even think about slowing the rate of growth down for these programs? I mean, the conversation's insane right now.
No, that's right. And that's a very, very important point that you just raised about how these proposals are assessed in Washington. This is something, frankly, that only really exists in Washington. And these are, to be fair, nonpartisan. They're neutral, kind of like budget gnomes or budget analysts. But it's just the way that they count government and count numbers and count you know, the growth of government. They assume a certain amount of growth. So if the budget grows less than the amount that they have already previously assumed, it's taken as a cut. Just like you said, if it only grows at 2%, but they expect 6%, that's seen as a 4% cut. That's part of the problem, right? There are states in this country that use what's called zero-based budgeting. They start at zero every year. Every dollar has to be voted on. Nothing is assumed. Nothing is constant. These are just some of the reforms that would go a long way to making things better at the federal level. But ultimately, again, as you mentioned, it takes political courage. And it's very concerning to see Republicans, frankly, also getting on board and kind of falling victim to some of the Democrat narratives saying, oh, we can't touch our entitlements, or we need a new entitlement. They'll say we need a, you know, bigger child tax credit, or we need a some kind of family benefit. And these ideas all have merit as far as what they're trying to do. Yeah. But the last thing we need is another entitlement that we can't afford. and another government program trying to solve a social problem, because it just does not work, and it's bankrupting us and our kids.
No, it really is, and it doesn't work. I want to use an example of like the Farm Bill, which I know is coming up, and being in the middle of the country here, a lot of people focus on that, being in the agricultural industry. The Farm Bill used to be actual, you know, crop insurance and things that help actual farmers. Now we have it about 90% of the Farm Bill that's the actual SNAP program and food stamps, to where it doesn't do anything for the actual farmers. It doesn't do anything for an agricultural industry, but they've lumped it in there because, well, it's food, so let's go ahead and put it in this Farm Bill because it's food. And now we have a program that's never going to go away, that doesn't actually benefit the agricultural industry, but yet we have this program that's bankrupting this nation. I don't know anybody, Akash, that's willing to fight and actually separate these sorts of things and have a serious conversation about it.
Well, there is a small number, and the Farm Bill is a good example. I'll give you another piece of irony when it comes to the Farm Bill, right, which is that we've got the state, it's sort of this unholy alliance. You've got Democrats who represent cities that push for SNAP, the welfare program, then you've got Republicans who represent rural farm areas pushing for farm subsidies. But at the same time, all these things are subsidized, and government turns around and undermines them at the same time. The same federal government that's trying to subsidize farming with the Farm Bill turns around and slaps tariffs on all these things, on the equipment that farmers need and all these other things that make it more difficult, more expensive to farm in this country. And then, you know, we make it more difficult for working class people to get jobs and have higher incomes, and we raise their taxes, you know, and then we turn around and blow up the SNAP program to a level it was never meant to be. So they're sort of taking from one end, putting it into another, and it doesn't really make any sense. That's why one of the reforms we've pushed for at AFC, Andy, is what's called a unified budget. And what that means is that Congress needs to consider all of its spending, all of its revenue, all together, right? We rarely ever do that, where all the authorizing committees, every member of Congress, gets to see all of it all at once. And again, this is something a lot of states do. South Carolina does this. And, you know, my home state of Rhode Island does a close version of this. So red states, blue states alike, they have unified budgets that allow you to see the dollars spent all together and debate each item. That's something Washington doesn't do, and it's particularly harmful in this area of entitlements and kind of these subsidy programs that we're talking about.
Yeah, we got to pass it to see what's in it, right? The big omnibus, throw everything in together and then just pass it, or else you hate the military and you hate poor people and sick people and all this other garbage they try and spread with us. We're talking with Akash Shoghali. He's the Vice President of Americans for Prosperity. Our great friends and partners here on The Voice of Reason. You can find all their information, prosperityispossible.com. Let's talk about the income that we see from the government for just a moment. And I don't know your stance on this. I'd love to get your opinion on what the best mode is. We're trying to reform, at least some are trying to reform, taxes on a flat tax or a fair tax or eliminating the IRS or making things simplified to actually benefit the private state and then being able to bring some revenue into the federal government. But is one better than the other? And is that an option that could actually move forward at some point at the federal level?
So, you know, I think these proposals have merit as far as what they're trying to do, but we have to be realistic, right? Everyone wants a fair, simple, flat tax code. The IRS is just an absolute nightmare to deal with. People just got done filing their taxes, and it sucks like it always does. The IRS, as we remember from the Obama years, is full of left-wing bureaucrats that are out to get a lot of conservatives. So these reforms have merit, but let's be realistic, right? The number one priority coming into next year, for example, Andy, the individual tax cuts in the 2017 tax reform, it did that, right? It shrank the number of brackets, it simplified the tax code. It wasn't perfect, but those individual tax cuts are going to expire. And just this week, like 2 days ago, President Biden said he is going to let all of those individual income tax cuts expire, not just the ones on the wealthy, all of them. That's a $2 trillion tax hike up and down the income ladder. 80%, more than 80% of Americans benefited from those individual tax cuts. President Biden said he will let them expire. That's a massive tax hike. Let's extend those, make those permanent, and then let's start to look at reforms, right? One of the other things Biden has done that folks don't talk about a lot, he talks about corporations paying their fair share. He has nearly doubled, 92% increase in corporate welfare subsidies under President Biden. Yeah. And so he hands out corporate welfare special favors to his friends in the electric vehicle industry and the chips industry and what have you, and then wants to raise the corporate tax rate for everybody else. That's the exact opposite of what the proposals you're talking about would do. It's the opposite of what the TCJA did. We need to have low taxes, fair taxes, flat taxes across the board, a low corporate tax rate, low individual tax rates, as few practices as possible can, and none of these, you know, handouts, carve-outs, subsidies, corporate welfare, those things make it more complicated, more confusing, and frankly are what blanket on economic growth in our free market, free enterprise system.
Yeah, what a concept. Actually doing some true changes at Washington, D.C. and allowing the private sector to flourish the way that it actually needs to. Akash Oghli, the Vice President for Americans for Prosperity, we're hanging out with him. You can find them online at prosperityispossible.com. Prosperityispossible.com. Hold on the line, Akash. I want to continue this conversation when we come back right after the break. And I want to talk about the way the economy is right now. And are Republicans still willing to actually change some of this? And what kind of conversation would that take to actually change some of this? We'll do that when we come back here around the corner. It is the Voice of Reason's weekend edition. Lots to get to for sure. One more segment with Akash Oghli, Vice President of Americans for Prosperity. The economy, I know, it's kind of boring stuff, but like the most important conversation you can have. You can't talk about social issues unless you actually have money in your bank account and food on the table to have the ability to have these deeper conversations. Lots more coming up. Stay here.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. America's safe space for common sense. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Darn right, it is common sense, reason, rationale, your safe space for all this stuff. I know that it's a scary world out there when it comes to the lack of, but that's what we do here on this program, so you know that you're in friendly territory when you want common sense, reason, and rationale like we do every weekend here on the program. Make sure to find us online at HoosierReason.com. You can find our social media at Hoosier Reason. I've been sharing some fun memes and some other fun goodies there, which some of them went kind of viral. So it was neat. Go and check us out at Hoosier Reason, H-O-O-S-E-R Reason, and HoosierReason.com. We continue our conversation with Akash Oghli, Vice President of Americans for Prosperity, our great partners with us here on the program, which you can find more information as well at prosperityispossible.com. And Akash, we were talking about some of the social programs that are essentially bankrupting this nation. Look, I'm 35, I'm a millennial, and I keep being told that I'm not going to receive Social Security when I get to that retirement age, because regardless of what people think, when I'm paying into it, I'm not paying into a savings account that I get back when I actually retire. I'm paying for somebody on it right now. So Akash, is there an opportunity to do what there's been kind of a lingering talk about for decades on, is privatizing Social Security to make sure that it actually is lasting for the next generations that need it?
No, you're right. Folks, you know, I'm about the same age as you. I'm 34, but folks older than us might remember when President George W. Bush proposed something like that, and people went crazy over it. You remember Paul Ryan just a few years ago, the Democrats were running ads about him rolling granny off a cliff. The rhetoric is exactly the opposite of reality, which is, let me give you something your listeners might not be aware of. In current law, in the text of the law today, the law that governs Social Security, if the funding shortfall that exists today in Social Security is not addressed, within the next 10 years, the benefits that people receive from Social Security will be cut by 23%. That's not you and me, Andy, in our 30s that are going to retire 30, 40 years. That is people today, our grandparents, our parents, and others who are on Social Security. Their benefits overnight could be cut 23% if we don't get these programs in order. Medicare, same situation, right? We've got programs in Medicare, Medicare Advantage, for example, that functions like a pro-free market system. It costs less money. It gives beneficiaries more choices, more freedom, less, you know, reliance on government control. So there's a number of kind of obvious fixes that are on the table. You know, raising the retirement age, I think, is one that gets boogeymaned a lot, but life expectancy and work expectancy is not the same for you and I that it was for our grandparents. I think our social programs should reflect that. And so there's no shortage of good ideas. It's just a matter of the political courage to pursue them.
Yeah.
And while they have many differences, and this is one place where the two presidential nominees, frankly, are nearly identical, right? Both Biden and Trump have pledged not to touch entitlement programs because they think it's a political kind of hot potato. And frankly, they're both old anyway. It's not going to be their problem to deal with because they only have 4 years left either way. And so it's going to be the problem of future generations. That's why we're looking for, you know, younger members of Congress, younger folks in society who care about these issues, don't want to see massive tax hikes, to step up and demand better for our elected officials.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Last question for you, Akash, and I appreciate your time as always. I love chatting with you. But you mentioned some of the health care stuff, the Medicare, Medicaid. I know a lot of states work to expand Medicaid, which was just kind of a portion of the Obamacare that we saw under the Obama administration. But how many states are actually regretting that move and actually trying to find alternatives now because the federal government's not reimbursing them at that 90% rate, which is what they promised, and the quality kind of isn't really there?
No, that's exactly right. I testified on this exact issue in Kansas back in 2016, maybe. I'm losing track of the years here. But this is exactly the point that we were talking about at the time. And it's come to fruition. It's the point, right, which is that Medicaid and pensions, right, these obligations are eating up huge, huge chunks of state budgets. And it's leaving less and less money for education, for public safety, for infrastructure. All these other things that people need are being swallowed up. Because while the federal government today is promising 90% just for that Medicaid expansion population, right, the able-bodied adults, not even for the traditional Medicaid population, they get more like a 50-50 match, depending on the state from the federal government. That match is not going to be there forever. And eventually these costs are going to increase for states, and they're going to have to make tough choices. It's really unfortunate that, frankly, again, a lot of red states have kind of just fallen victim to this and taken the quote-unquote free money. But it's going to come back to haunt them. They've got to start looking for an off-ramp here very shortly if they haven't already done so.
Yeah, well, I hope that people come to their senses. Luckily, here in Kansas, where I'm based out of right now, that we've been able to hold it off, and even our Democrat governor pushed it really hard this year, and luckily it didn't go anywhere. So hopefully we can keep that in motion. It is Americans for Prosperity, prosperityispossible.com. Also go and check out the website at Bidenomics.com. See the true numbers of what the Biden administration has done over the past 3 years with inflation, energy costs, food costs, and so much more. It's Akash Shogli, the vice president of AFP. Akash, it's always good to talk to you, my friend. Keep up this fight. We love partnering with you here on the radio program. Let's do it again real soon, my friend.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you.
There he goes, out again, Akash Shogli, Vice President of Americans for Prosperity. We're out of time as well, my friends. Until then, everybody have a great weekend. This is The Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. We'll see you on the radio.